When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome to Knife Talk, another fine episode where myself, Mareko Malmasi, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, we talk knives and a bunch of other stuff as well, but we try to stick on the subject of knives at least. So welcome. Thank you for joining us. Jeff, how's your week been? How are things?
It sucked. I shouldn't say that. It hasn't sucked. It was fine, except for the fact that on Tuesday, all of a sudden, one half of my shop, the power went off, which is weird.
Oh.
So I immediately went over to the breaker box. The breakers were fine, and it was a very strange thing. None of the breakers had flipped over. And turns out the transformer outside the building, there's this, like, this, you know, cable that goes from the building, from the street to the building, was like dangling. And I had talked to the manager of the building, and he said it happened before, and they just every time there's a big storm, something happens to this transformer. So he says that we've gotten a hold of them, and they're supposed to be here to fix it. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll just get some, you know, extension cords. And then, you know, Tuesday rolls around.
Was it like Back to the Future? Were you hanging off and the thunderstorm's happening and you're trying to put these wires together?
Right.
And so.
Yeah. I'm Doc. I'm like, okay, Marty, let's bring it to 80 feet. So, no, it was me with not knowing what was working and what wasn't working. Like, some of my wires were working, some of them weren't. Most of them on one side weren't. So I had to, like, stick, you know, extension cords everywhere, and then I ran out of extension cords, so I couldn't use this grinder, and then I'd unplug and then I'd do this one, and it was extraordinarily frustrating. But then I was talking to the manager, and he was having nothing but problems with Con Edison, and they said, well, you got to get your electrician to come, and then they file a report, and we're like, we should send a picture of this, like, dangling thing, and I'm like, this is, you need an electrician to tell you this is fucked up. And, you know, all the 220 was out in the building, so, you know, there's a guy who paints cars. He couldn't use his spray booth. And now I couldn't use my heat treating ovens. And now today it's gotten cold. And I was like, I might as well burn a little bit of oil. And all of a sudden, you know, oil, my heater's on 220. So I'm just sour. I'm fucking sour. Mm. Sour.
So when is that expected to be fixed?
It was supposed to be fixed on Wednesday. It's Friday. Oh. So it's like, it's just like, it's all bureaucracy. And then, of course, I'm an idiot and I'm turning on machines and I got wires all over the place. So, you know, I turn on one of the grinders and, you know, one of the wires, I cut the plug to the Porto band. So I cut that in two, you know, it was in the way. So it was like I had to go get, you know, all these replacement plugs, and I was irritated. But then I got to do my first knife for this set going out, and I'm going to be doing watercolors for that, and I'm excited because I'm ahead on that because I can't fucking heat treat other things. So it was a lot of grinding and hand sanding and, you know, preparation and blah, 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 blah. But I'm sour. I'm really sour.
Things can only get better.
Maybe. We'll see.
Well, I've got an extremely bad head today. I'm in the UK. Actually, we were going to come back tomorrow. We've got a flight booked for tomorrow. But we're putting that off until Thursday now. So we're staying an extra few days. Just because we haven't managed to do much at all. Like, see a lot of family and all that kind of stuff. So we're staying an extra few days. But Went out last night with my brothers and my father for a few drinks. And yeah, I'm suffering badly.
Out
I'm
came not used the whiskey. To it.
Oh God, no whiskey. God, no. Just beer. But I'm just not used to it. You know, I can't drink. Yeah. I'm very fragile.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but you may or may not have sent me a drunken email.
I did respond to an email that you sent me. Yes, yeah. I saw it this morning. I was like, what?
Shall I read it? Shall
no,
I
it's
it?
Fine. It's fine.
You sure?
I'm sure.
I'm gonna fucking save this thing for the rest of my life. It was a real fucking loving. Oh boy, it was.
So anyway, you had sent me the email with the details of your interview with Toma, which you did for Full Blast, which I've been listening to. I haven't finished it yet, but I started listening to that today. Yeah. It's very good. There's so much that I didn't know about him.
He's an interesting guy. He actually, in regards to, like, if you like, I hate the whole like, I'm here to inspire you, but like his story is fucking inspiring. I mean, he came back from, you know, just about as, I mean, failure upon failure. He didn't graduate from college because his project, they failed him. He had to go back another year, and that's,
that
you'll have to get into the story for that. But it was.
But I haven't got to the end yet, so I don't know if it all turns out well. I don't know yet.
I'm looking at this email. I'm gonna hold off on the email. I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna fucking keep this fucking thing. This fucking drunken email is so good.
Oh geez. So what this week? What else has been going on? It's been spending time with family, basically, and you know that kind of thing. I got roped into to a live theatre show of Peppa fucking Pig, which was
Sure, you got roped
into the highlight of my week.
Yeah,
3,000 kids screaming like for 90 minutes, just non-stop screaming. It's just jeez.
So what's the vibe like in Wales right now?
With regards to COVID, you mean?
Everything. I mean, was it nice being home or was it weird?
It's nice being home. It's a little bit unnerving because, you can go into shops and things without masks on. I mean, restaurants, even the servers aren't wearing masks. So it's not what we're used to because back in France, everybody wears masks for everything. So it's a little bit unnerving. We've had a bit of a cold sort of ripped through the family as well. So we've been doing COVID tests every day because we're just super paranoid, especially with my wife being pregnant and the rest of it. So, thankfully everybody's good. I say that apart from my brother. So just before he arrived here, I had an email from him saying. Me and the family have COVID, but he's fine. He basically had almost like a flu, basically. He's fine. But yeah, it feels pretty normal here, and most people are just going about their day as they were before. I hear there's more restrictions coming in again soon. You know, they're going to bring back masks again because the numbers are spiking again, and I think it's just going to be something that we'll live with for a long time. It'll be bad, it'll be good, it'll be bad, it'll be good. And I just think, people have to get used to that, maybe.
Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, yes. But it just feels as if, winter's, everything's black. From sort of 4 p.m, everything is black within a wilderness. It's just like, oh, man, it's going to be a long, long winter. I can feel it already. But
Can I ask a question to the both of you?
Sure.
I was thinking about this because I was thinking about, I know somebody who's a flat earther. And one thing I can't understand is how do they justify the change in time? Like, the whole thing about the flat earth is flat earth, blah, blah, walls and falling off the air and they shoot you down and all that bullshit and it's not really stars and stuff. But how do they justify the fact that it's dark in different parts at different times? Like, it's like early morning, it's like midday for Mareko. It's like almost 4 o'clock for me and it's like 9 o'clock for you and it's dark. How do they figure that out?
Yeah, I think they've got an argument for everything. These silly people.
I have no idea.
I think. Yeah, Mareko, your week. What's been going on?
It's been basic knife making this week. Got a knife sent out. Got a knife on its way to be finished. Just did coffee etch last night, and it came out great. Been forging some steel this week. Just trying to think. Outside of that, I mean, it's just been basic knife stuff. Trying to do a better job of staying on top of my mess making, because I mentioned before I have a bit of a mess I've been trying to clean up in the shop, and as part of trying to be more organized with my time and efficiency and workflow, part of that I've started to recognize is just keeping things tidier. So you go back and when you need a certain tool, you know exactly where it's at because it's where it's supposed to be. Stuff like that. I have a tendency to work and set something down and then and then I can't find it for a couple of days.
Do you have one of those like tool walls that I see people do and they paint the tool on so when it's not there you can see from a distance and all that kind of
right.
stuff?
Right. Yeah, I actually built one of those when I was working for Bob Kramer and we made that over his main workbench and we used that religiously, which is weird because I do not have one of those and I do not do that. But that would probably be a very strong move for me to do, to be able to easily reference and find things. And it's weird, like working for other people and doing stuff for other people was easy to do that. But when I'm doing it for myself, I fucking suck at it. So, so I'm just trying to create new habits. That's the biggest thing I've been learning and reading about is just habitual practice. Really makes things grinds in those things and makes them habits for long term. And so I'm just trying to establish those. Outside of that, let's see, Halloween's coming up. We're gonna be hanging out with the family this weekend, which should be fun. Yeah, and I don't know if I'm gonna be dressed as that. I don't have any ideas. I think last year, what did I do last year? I think I dressed up. I have these like polar bear pajamas, and so I was just a polar bear last Halloween. I repurposed my Christmas pajamas for Halloween. I got nothing right now. I'm trying to think what else.
We've been carving pumpkins today, actually. It's
nice.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh, that was, we did that last Sunday. We went pumpkin picking. We got one. My son, he had a blast doing that, and we all went with the cousins and everybody. And then we came back to our house, and we carved it that night, and it's probably one of the more fun pumpkins I've ever seen. And he drew it all himself, drew the pumpkin face and everything. I did the carving. He helped with scooping all the crap out. And it came out really well. And I love the pumpkin. It's super fun. But yeah.
You know what's weird about pumpkins?
What's that?
Like that flavor isn't from pumpkins. Like the pumpkin flavor, it's not pumpkins. It's winter squash.
Winter squash. I mean, we've made pie from sugar pumpkins, which are considerably smaller. They're like maybe the size of a volleyball or a cantaloupe, versus the carving pumpkins that, you know, most people see are, you don't want to eat those. You can eat them, but they're not very flavorful.
No.
But yeah.
Terrible.
They are kind of terrible.
They're fucking terrible. Let's just cut the shit here. The pumpkin flavor is not good. I mean, it is not good.
Oh,
I defy puree
by itself
pumpkin pies.
Terrible.
Pumpkin pie is passable, but I mean, no one's ever craving it until,
I fucking love pumpkin pie. You're talking to the wrong guy.
In the middle of the summer?
I asked for it for my birthday one year.
Jesus.
Mom's like, what do you want?
August. It's close enough. August is close enough to the fall, and maybe I can understand that. But like,
you just said the middle of summer.
I mean, the dead of July, it's like, 900 degrees out. You're not like, God, I could go for some pumpkin pie right now. Fuck that. Terrible.
I love it. I love it too much. I've just had better pumpkin pie than you.
Probably. Ooh. You probably have.
Shots above the bow.
This is a shot that I accept. No problem. It's fine. I mean, I'm not going to like lose my mind over pumpkin pie.
No.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised I don't see more squash pies, like a butternut or like an acorn squash or something like, those other kind of winter squashes like you're talking about that are more amenable, tastier.
This reminds me, it's a very good point because it's the upsell. You can't upsell a squash pie, Squash pie is going to happen. And what makes this funny is I posted a photograph of a set of knives that I posted that I had some walnut on it. I get figured walnut, and I don't know the different types of figured walnut. So, I get all this figured walnut called figured walnut, right? So I get this DM from Roy Scott, Vintage Axe Works. I love Roy. Roy is great. He's a, such a wonderful person. In person, he's not like he is on the podcast with the motherfucker head. We started calling him mother. He just started. All you want to do when you see Roy Scott is say, hey, motherfucker head. He's the best. I love Roy. He sneaks into my DMs and he goes, hey, man, don't hate me. I wanted to tell you that I think that that's called, that might not be figured walnut, but it might be crotch grained walnut.
Oh, sure.
And he says, maybe you should call it crotch grain walnut. And I said, Roy, that's a hard sell, don't you think, when you have crotch in the name? You can't just sell. How am I supposed to upsell crotch grain walnut to a nice family who want a carving set?
Yeah.
Fucking crotch grain walnut? I'm supposed to. What am I supposed to do with that, Roy?
And he's like, yeah, Mabel's not going to start bragging about that.
I mean, it's like, you know, here it'll have some, you know, testicle maple. Why about that? I mean, genital me just, cherry. Yeah, that's perfect.
Jot that down as a show title.
Yeah.
Testicle maple.
No, we have to like, we're going to have to start to, gussy us up. Oh, you fucking wrote it down already. We got to gussy it up because all these other Fleabag podcasts are going to start to like rip us off with our naughty titles.
Naming conventions.
Well, you start to see the similarities.
Hey, Jeff.
Yes.
Jeff, I can do you a solid, as you Americans like to say.
Go ahead.
You're 220, 240s down at the moment. Why don't you get yourself a nice new 110 kiln? I can get you a discount, you know.
Tell me about it.
If you get one of the KH models of the Evenheats, they're the 120 versions, which I believe you had one in the past anyway. You know, Evenheats, everybody needs an Evenheat because they're the best on the market. But we can get you $75 off and free shipping in the US if you buy yours from Soul Ceramics, who are a distributor of Evenheats. And if you go to knifetalk.net/heat, that'll take you automatically to Soul Ceramics. It'll automatically apply those discounts for you, and they can do you a KH model, but they also do all the other stuff, the KOs and all them, the LBs, they do them all. So spec yours out, get $75 off and free shipping in the US. I think that's a solid, as you guys say.
That's a fucking good idea. And to our, get yourself a crotch grain, even heat, it's no problem. No, seriously though, I think there's this misconception that you have to pay thousands of dollars for an oven. You can get the 120 models, and they're very reasonably priced. So, you know, go get yourself an even heat and save that $75 off. Good call.
There we go.
Good call.
There we go. Let's do some questions that we had from the filthy public this week. And I'll start with the first one, which is from Mr. Thirsty Work on Instagram. He said, first, thanks for the entertainment and education, ranging from grinding tips to prostate exams. I've just started listening this week, so apologize if you've answered this in the past. He said, I'm relatively new to knife making, 2 to 3 years. I'd like to think I do pretty quality work, but recognize that this is a hobby, and I do not have... Okay, he goes on and on and on and on. I'm just looking for the question here. That said, I've been recruited by several people lately who've seen my past works and want some chef knives. How would you go about setting up a reasonable price point? On one hand, I use top quality material. I've been through some educational courses and will spend many hours on each knife until I think it's as close to perfect as I can get it. But on the other hand, who the heck am I looking to ask, you know, $300-$400 for a single knife with no real history behind my name? She says, thanks again. You're the only podcast that's made me check to see if I peed after laughing so hard.
just before you go on, I think your microphone is scratching against that beard of yours.
Beard of mine.
Massive beard.
Those two hairs.
You kidding?
Those fucking two hairs.
I named those hairs. Right, okay. That should be better. I'll hold it out. What she said. So this guy, he's been making knives for 2 or 3 years. Apparently, maybe he doesn't have much of a following, or, you know, like he says, he doesn't have much of a history behind him. But, you know, he's putting the work in, and, you know, how would he go about pricing, and what he thinks maybe $300-$400 for a single knife could be a hard push. Where'd you go from there? What do you think?
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean, I'd have to see the work, but I think, you know, $300-$400 isn't a terrible place to start. I mean, even if you're spending, you know, 10 hours of work on one knife, that's $4 an hour, right? Or is that 40? I did the
40.
Math wrong.
40. Yeah, 40.
That's not bad then.
$4. $4 now. But, Jesus Christ.
But yeah, I don't know. I think all those things factor in, but I feel like we've talked about before on the podcast. First off, cost of materials isn't necessarily that big of a factor. It really is your time, but also part of that is who the hell are you? Who is the person that's making that? And that's another reason. That's actually, I feel like more and more that is a bigger factor for why people are buying particular knives versus others, is because of the person behind that knife. And so I think, you know, if you can do a good job talking to these people and reason to them, you know, if you want to go that way. Like if you were to go to like hold a table at a trade show or something like that, like that's part of what you get the opportunity to do is to talk to these people. They see your work, you talk to them about your process, everything you've gone through, past experiences, what you've learned. Like all, you just have conversations with them. And but what all that is like part of that is getting to know, like figure out what the price is, but it's also getting to know who you are. And so I think the better job you can do selling yourself, the easier it is going to be for you to sell your knives. Because I see some knives out there that make me cringe a little bit that sell for a lot of money, and that person's done a good job selling themselves and the company.
Yeah, you're right. Selling yourself is part of it, and you know, there's various ways you can do that. You know, obviously online and all the rest of it. But being comfortable with selling your work, it certainly took me a while. You know, to be comfortable with it, but you know, get yourself a good, you know, AK Interactive. They do a good website for you. You can, you know, tell your story, and you know, build some value into what you're making. I'm a massive believer in that. If you can tell a story, you are building value because people are buying into you as much as the actual product itself. But what are your thoughts, Jeff?
You have to if you make something and somebody wants to buy it, you have to think about it, what you're willing to part with it for. I mean, regardless if it's a knife or not, you know, like if you make something and it has a particular value to you, then it's like, what am I willing to let this go for? And that part of it all is a mindset. I mean, of course, you know, you look at what other people are selling their stuff for and you don't think yourself, you know, don't think you're worth a certain amount or whatever. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, when I was selling sculpture, it was always like, what am I willing to sell this? What am I going to be fine with this leaving? Somebody's going to give me a small pile of money and I'll be happy with it, or I won't be happy with it. So I think a lot of it's that. I don't necessarily think that I think that you should, especially starting out, you should just see what you think it's worth and then see what people are willing to pay. A lot of times in the beginning, it's usually friends and family. So like they usually want to help you too. Like, you know, maybe, you know, grandma might not try to nickel and dime you, you know, she might be like, look at my little boy. He's making nice knives. I should give him a little bit extra money. Here's my social security check, Junior. I mean, it's a lot.
Take that money and run.
Yeah, take that fucking money and take that battle bat for what she's worth, you know? Honestly, it's like, you know, in the beginning stages, it's friends and family, and then some of them are going to be like, yo, I don't want to pay that much. Or you're going to have to fool around, and then you're going to have to do more, and then you have to figure it out, and then you have to fool around some more, and then you have to work on your pricing, and then you have to look at your bills and what is your rent cost and what does it cost to make you this do this thing. And there's so many factors to pricing, and it comes down to what you want to be valued yourself. And I personally like the idea of being approachable, for me, and that's my opinion, but like, you know, it's a personal situation. I don't wouldn't really worry about what other people are doing and just see what you're willing to do it for. Sounds like you already know what you kind of want to sell it for.
Yeah. Well, the next question, if you want to take the next one, Mareko, is in a similar sort of vein, I suppose, talking about pricing.
Sure, yeah. This one's from Ross Oliver Moffett. He says, should you charge current market price for material or charge what you paid for them at the time of purchase? I hope that makes sense. So I'm guessing he's talking about either Damascus, like if you were doing stock removal and you buy your Damascus, or your handle material and you buy handle material, whatever other kind of materials you're using in the product. What was I saying? Prices obviously change over time. But do you up that price when you're adding it to the cost of something when you're selling it to somebody, or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't buy in Damascus. I don't use Damascus, so I don't make it and I don't buy it in. But if you do, obviously that can be a big cost.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, you know, mono steels and even, you know, handle materials, that kind of thing, it's the material price isn't really a factor when it comes to pricing the overall product for me, because those materials are generally pretty, you know, inexpensive. So yeah, it's maybe different for, you know, for me, but it, you know, if, you know, for example, if people are using Dharma steel or things like that, it can become pretty expensive. So, yeah, I don't know. You'd have to maybe, yeah, certainly, obviously you're charging a premium for these because you're using premium product, you're using premium, stuff in your knives. But yeah, I'd imagine you'd have to build in some sort of, you know, leeway in case prices do go up. But yeah, Jeff, I mean, are you buying in sort of expensive materials?
Well, for Damascus, when I do buy Damascus, I buy it from Bob Rankin, and then I usually just charge whatever he's charging me. We add that on the bill. You can't just buy Damascus on my website and it's like that the price just shows up. So usually I'll get some and then we'll just kind of factor that into the bill. But actually, recently I ordered some steel. I mentioned it last week that the company I was buying some stainless from, well, everything was back ordered. And they said, well, we have one piece of your order if you want it. And I'm like, yeah, I want it. And they said, but we'll have to cut it in half. So it's not going to be like a 6 foot length. It'll be 2 36-inch lengths. And I was like, all right, well, I kind of need it. So. But then in my mind, I'm thinking, well, it kind of screws me because it's like I wouldn't get as much out of it as I would have if it was the full length. Mm. And then they charged me full blast for the fucking shipping. So like when I ended up getting it, I'm looking at these two pieces of steel that cost me way more than I would have charged. You know, I wouldn't have gotten – they should have done me right and, you know, give me the free shipping, especially considering I'm getting not really what I explained to them and they didn't really give a shit. So like I lost a knife in there and I got – overcharged on the shipping. So I'm eating it. I'm not gonna adjust my pricing because of that one piece. I mean, I try not to think about that kind of stuff in regards to $5 here, $3 here. I try not to get to, you know, like the cost of Corby bolts changes because of the brass and whatever like that. I'm not gonna really, you know, $1 here, $2 here, $5 here, $10 here. I don't really get all flustered about it. Just know that in the long run, it all evens out. Yeah, but like, sure. You know, I made a note, the fact that shipping costs are up. So I made a note to that and brought it up in our next meeting. And we'll just be aware that, you know, if the shipping costs.
Brought it up in our next meeting. Look at you, the board member.
Dude, I love our meetings. Our meetings are my favorite. It's my favorite. I love our meetings. Our Zoom meetings. They get a lot done. Those guys get a lot done. I just pipe in when they need me. It's great.
Nice.
I'm on Instagram while they're, you know, talking about back office stuff. I'm scrolling, and they ask me a question, and I pop in. Yeah, what's up?
Does that make you the C? Are you the COO?
I'm the DUMBO. So,
nice.
If that's really what it is. It's a team effort, guys. It's a team effort.
I would say, you know, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to, you know, I buy a piece of koa, a really nice piece of koa, and I get it for a decent price, $40, $50. But I know that it's something that I easily could have paid through somebody else for like $100 or $80 or something like that. Or the value of koa goes, some of the handle blocks I have sitting in my collection have been sitting there for 5 or 6 years. The same handle material today would cost way more. It doesn't make sense to me that I would charge more to the customer because I'm not out that money. Like I think at least charge or carry across the cost that you paid originally, but why upcharge it? I don't know. I mean, obviously some people do that. I'm sure some people do that, but it doesn't, to me, it doesn't logically make sense.
Yeah. But we just mentioned Dharma Steel, actually. So if you are If you use Dharma Steel and you're looking to get maybe a discount, you need to come to our show on November the 13th. It's the Dharma Steel Chef Invitational. We'll be doing a live show just like we did last time. We had lots and lots of fun speaking to all of the people there who are having their booths, all the makers and so on. But they've got lots of activities this time as well. So there's I'm just looking on the website here. It says there's going to be a forging demo as well, a live forging demo, which you'll be able to watch the live stream by Nate Bonner of NHB Knife Works.
Cool.
The Italian guy, Alfredo, which we didn't get to speak to last time, he's got another booth again this time. But in between stuff, he's going to be doing a live cookery demonstration as well, which could be quite fun to watch. So yeah, it's called Steel and Meal, dinner at Facci's. So he's cooking dinner live in his booth at the same time. And obviously there's us. We're going to be doing our show. So yeah, November the 13th, I'll put a link in the description there so you can sign up to make sure you get your ticket. There's going to be raffle draws and so on. And I'm going to try and convince Pear to give us a big discount for you guys as well. Oh, so Jesus. Make sure you're there. I'm going to put him on the spot again.
Jesus.
and hopefully we can get you guys we can get you guys a nice discount for your beautiful Dharma Steel.
Can I make a request? Can we be in Alfredo's booth while he's cooking?
Could be cool, couldn't it?
Alfredo, I know you're listening, and I know you wouldn't come on the last time because you said your English wasn't good. I don't believe that for a fucking second. When you get cooking, you better have us on. We're going to have some fun. I promise you, we will be there for you. I want to see what's what.
It'll be fun. I want the whole place to burn down. I want it to be. I want it to be fun. You know.
Jesus.
You know. There's steam everywhere. There's pots overflowing.
Hey, what's going on over there? Hey, we got a fire over there. Be great. Oh, speaking of fires, P.S. Guys, listen to the newest episode of Work For It podcast because Brian House was burned his fucking shop down. It was a terrifying story, and it was all about, you know, being aware of your fire extinguishers and making sure that they're up to date. So glad that Brian House is okay, and he didn't, you know, he apparently burned all the hair off his face and his hair.
Oh, wow.
So he's like, you know. No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. I was kind of like, you guys were like, seriously, oh my God, he's fucking hairless now. I'm like, no. He's fine. He's fine. But it was, he had a moment. So listen to
my concern was not for the hair. It was for the level of burns you would have to sustain to lose all of the hair off your face and your head.
People burn their hair off their face. I mean, that happens. You get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and poof.
Watch that beard.
He's fine, but you should listen to the story, and you should make sure your shop is, you know, get rid of your sawdust and all the rags in your shop. And I immediately dig up two bags of garbage in my truck as we speak because I listen to the podcast.
Nice. Okay, fair enough. Do you want to take the next one, Jeff?
Sure. This one comes from Trojan Horse Forge. I have a dilemma. We have a knife with a carbon blade that we don't want Ferric to touch the blade because it's finished. The handle needed some adjustments and had to be reprofiled a bit. The handle is a 5-piece and assembled. Wrought iron bolster, spacer, butt cap. Black walnut is between the wrought iron. The wrought iron needs to be deep etched again. We have a few ideas, but what process would you suggest? So it sounds as though the bolster needs to be etched, but they don't want anything else to be etched. What do you do?
Morocco, this is all you.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a hidden tang construction. And if it is, that is helpful because then you can mask off and, I guess, what is it? You can paint nail polish over the blade where you don't want the acid to do anything and the handle material where you don't want the acid to come into contact. And honestly, like, it'll probably be a long process. But if you use like a, what is it? Like a cotton swab. What the fuck? I can't think of the word right now.
Q-tip.
You use it, clean out your ears, you know?
Q-tip.
Jesus. If you use one of those with the acid, you can kind of just go back in and paint it back in there. But it is a slow process. But it's a much more controlled process. And it helps prevent having to go back in and clean up the blade or do anything else to any of the other handle materials or potentially staining the handle materials. I have had to do this before. It is a pain in the ass, but it works. It's gonna take time. That would be my advice. What about you, Craig?
I do exactly as you said, Mareko.
That's it.
Exactly as you said.
That's right. Listen,
I'd be fool not to. Okay, Nick Tobin, again on Instagram, sent a question, and he's asking about business on Facebook. He said, running my business on Facebook has worked for me over the past 20 months, but now things are changing noticeably, and Facebook and my insights are going down hard. It's affecting my business and gets frustrating. Besides social media and being in a small town in East Bumfuck, in the middle of nowhere.
That's what they call the middle of nowhere.
Yes. East Bumfuck. Right, okay. What else can be done to grow such a business via the great internet? It looks as if he's doing a lot of business on Facebook, which I don't do any business on Facebook. I don't even have a Facebook presence, really.
You try West Bumfuck. East Bumfuck, but West Bumfuck, you never know. Uptown, I hear, is pretty good.
Yeah, you don't want to go north. No. business on Facebook. I mean, I said I don't even have a presence for the business on Facebook, simply because I don't think they're my customers. But also, I mean, you know, they try to get you to, you know, sell stuff on and all the rest of it. But then as soon as they know it's a knife, you're then told, you know, it's not allowed. It's just a lot of admin that I don't really see anything from. But obviously you do, or you had done. But with regards to, you know, other ways of doing it, I try not to put all my eggs in one basket. Social media, I do far, far less now. But, you know, once you've sort of established and you've got repeat customers and you've got people coming to your website, I always mention it, but emails are the biggest tool for me. You know, get people to subscribe to newsletters and then, you know, split up those newsletters to potential customers, to previous customers, and make sure you're sending out newsletters. They're by far the biggest sort of selling tool for me. Facebook, I've got no tips for Facebook, I'm afraid.
Pickle cutter. I mean, it looks like he's got like 233 posts on Instagram. I'm surprised that he's not getting, he has to be getting some business from Instagram, but I think Craig has the right ideas to diversify. So not have all your eggs in the Facebook basket, and you know, Facebook's going through some shit right now too. Anyways,
What is this fucking thing they're doing? What is this Meta? Anybody know?
Craig.
It's just the name for the company. So, you know, Facebook now owned, you know, Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook. And it's just confusing, you know, the whole company being called Facebook. So basically it's just the holding company is called Meta. So Facebook is a product. Right. Instagram is a product. And Snapchat. It's the same as Google did. You know, Google company is called Alphabet. And Google is just one of their products. And they've done the same thing, really. We won't see any changes. Yeah.
So stupid.
Yeah, the media seem to be going crazy. Facebook's changing its name. It's like, the product that we know is Facebook isn't changing its name.
So doing, you know, I ideally, Nick, if you're taking orders, you're getting some data, some information from these people too, that allows you to kind of remarket to them, and let them know, just like Craig was saying, like through newsletters, and stuff like that, when you have other stuff coming up, because I agree. I don't think it's a good idea to be all in one basket with Facebook. You know, try to offer more through Instagram. Just start testing it and see how it works over there. Even though Instagram obviously is a Facebook Meta product, same company that does Facebook. But even just diversifying a little bit there, but I would strongly advise, as Craig had said, to try to start maybe doing a newsletter. And it also is an opportunity to develop community and go back to like the branding we were talking about earlier. It gives you an opportunity to kind of put some personality to the work. And it you know, ingratiates yourself to these people and these potential customers, or it, you know, they might pass it on to somebody else and let them know. I think a newsletter and email is a strong move.
Whilst we're talking about Instagram, actually, I noticed this week that they're now allowing links in posts and stories, that kind of thing. for anybody, not just those with over 10,000 followers. Mm-hmm. So anybody can now put links in their stories. So, you know, if you're selling via Instagram, you don't have that big a following, you can now send people directly to your website, so, you know, to your, even to a cart page or whatever it is, so they can just check out and go. So that's quite nice.
Yeah.
Jeff, any tips for Nick?
I mean, I personally think that, you know, Instagram's for your friends and family, and then I see Instagram as, I mean, Facebook is more for your, you know, aunts and your uncles and your high school friends and stuff like that, and they're just, it's not really that great. I think in the beginning it's good, and then all of a sudden you've already squeezed everybody there. So Instagram, to my opinion, is more of like casting a wider net. Now, I won't change anything. I mean, I'm whatever you guys said is fine by me. One thing I will say that a lot of people get caught up on, which is one of the reasons why social media is so repellent, is people who use social media as business also decide that their personal political opinions matter, and then they become double repellent. So if you're using, I use social media for business. I don't give a fuck. I don't need people to know what political party I belong to, or who I like, or how I feel about this or how I feel about that. You're nobody cares. So, and you're gonna most likely have people who are gonna be like, ugh, why, what? Well, this guy's a flat earther. Not that I think that Pickle Cutter's a flat earther. I mean, I don't know this man at all. But I'm just saying that, like, why would you? I had a friend who was a really good knife maker, and one of his friends tagged him in this horrendously racist joke, and he, you know, it came up on my feed. I was just like, what does my friend have anything to do with it? And I sent him a message. I said, you shouldn't have anything to do with these things. He's like, oh, I didn't know anything about it. I'm like, well, you know, people see that you're a maniac because you're associated with another maniac. So it's just like, if you're going to use these social media as a business, why would you try to alienate people by saying something stupid or something that really, honestly, nobody gives a shit what you have to think about? But then what happens is, it's like, well, it's my freedom to say that. Okay, fine, it's your freedom. But then don't come back to me saying why my business is no good. Because I'm not saying Pickle Cutter did this, but this has happened. I know guys who have said stupid, not even like racist or sexist, or they're just stupid people, and they say stupid things. And then they come to me and they're like, wow, I'm so weird. Business is dried up. I'm like, yeah, because you're saying stupid things, and nobody cares what your opinions. Nobody. If you have something really, really intelligent to say, they call it the Fleabag Express. Go say it to someone that really knows you and see what they say. And if they think, wow, you should really publish that, still reconsider. Because honestly, it's just like nobody gives a shit about your political persuasions or your opinions. There you go.
Agreed.
There's an answer.
Let me tell you about Combat Abrasives. They make abrasive belts and a bunch of other stuff, but they actually make them as well. They don't just sell them. They make them. They're the best. We all use them. Everybody knows Combat Abrasives. CombatAbrasives.com. If you use Knife Talk 15, you'll get 15% off your order, which, you know, if you're buying, you know, quite a few belts, that's going to be a fair bit of money. So, yeah, CombatAbrasives.com and use Knife Talk 15. Do we have any dilemmas?
We have dilemmas, but beforehand, I want to read a couple of listener feedbacks that I think is important because it's nice.
Yeah.
We have dilemmas, and we're also going to have to bring back the beefs, and we're going to have to talk about beefs a little bit later. But regardless, this one comes from Connor Kanan. Hey, guys, I had my question answered about finding classes out in Austin, and I had some local listeners reach out to me and point me in the right direction. I want to give a shout-out to them for all their help. EC Knivery and Cooey Forge Works. Both of them do insanely clean work, and I just wanted to do something in return for them giving me the helping hand. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. So people listen to this podcast, and they reach out to them, and they help them out. So that's really nice.
Nice.
And then I feel like, Irish.
Oh,
pardon me?
I was just going to say, I feel like Cooey used to submit a lot of questions.
He listens. Yeah, he listened to the podcast, and he reached out. The EC Knifery, too.
That's great.
They're good guys. Lucky Irish Forgework says, hey, cuties, I just want to say I really enjoyed Craig playing his band's music at the end of the episode, and I want him to know that if he puts the track up, it's going to be on my playlist. Top shelf. I needed those two out there because, you know, Craig, you've gotten a number of people giving you a lot of credit and enjoying your music, and I'm one of those people too. I hope maybe you'll throw on a track here and there from Uplift.
Maybe we should. At the end of each show, we put something up. But the recordings aren't the best, to be honest, because you know the live recordings are never too good. But funnily enough, because we haven't rehearsed this week, there's been a few emails between, you know, me and the band and that kind of thing, and they challenged me to do a French song. So yeah. So do you know that, you know, ça plan pom wadin in 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 ça plan pom wadin in in, that song?
No.
Ah, right, okay. It was big in France.
You should definitely do it.
But yeah, I'm doing that,
you
so that'll be fun.
You
that'll
owe
be
them.
Fun.
You know, you owe them, because I think you're a bit of a pocket Hitler.
Oh, I am. Oh, I am. Yes, yeah.
Like Napoleon Hitler over there. Fucking Welsh Napoleon. Follow
so, yeah,
Uplift if
them.
You're on Facebook. Follow the band Uplift for all your uplifting situations.
For your rock and roll needs.
Okay,
let's do some of these dilemmas.
Okay, so here's a tough scenario, guys. If you want to interact with the show, follow us on Instagram, part of the Meta Network, at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can send us. That's the beacon. That's the beacon where we send you messages, say, okay, we need questions, or we need dilemmas, or we need feedback, or that's the way to get a hold of us, and not to our personal Instagrams, which some of you haven't figured that out yet. It's fine. Just keep it all at Knife Talk Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast. So these are tough scenarios that we're to answer honestly or phony, and we'll talk about that later. This one comes from Nav.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got a dilemma that's an extension of what you guys did a few episodes back, where you were asked if you'd sell to someone whose political or general ideology conflicted with yours. So I've been thinking about this more, and since social media is so accessible, and if I find out that other knife makers have really outlandish views, I really question if I'd buy from them or even buy secondhand. Would you guys buy from a maker or supplier if you knew that their views or values diametrically opposed you to your own?
No.
No.
Simply.
Really?
No. Yeah. I think, you know, we've all got the opportunity to sort of, you know, vote with, you know, who we purchase things from and, you know, who to support. And I think, you know, there's a shitbag out there. I'm not really interested in what they've got, really.
I mean, even just like slightly different. I mean, we're not talking about
He just said opposed.
Okay, diametrically opposed. All right, diametrically opposed. Yes, yes. So you're not going to go into business with Hitler. You're not going to G10. Oh, I got to get that.
Oh, no, there's a hell of a story behind that. You could sell that knife. I don't know. I'm thinking about that one.
I'm going to the Hitler G10 store.
Hitler G10. Jesus.
Okay, but I think if they're... You know, if you know about their views, that would mean that they're putting their views out there, you know? And I think, well, we just talked about it, people putting out their political views, it's easy then to half of your audience you could be, you know, turning off. So, yeah, if they're putting these views out there that I don't agree with, yeah, it's easy. You just move on to another supplier. There's plenty out there.
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean... God, if you're diametrically opposed to somebody's opinions, would you? I mean, I won't even shop at certain grocery stores or go to certain drive-through restaurants because I feel like my political opinions are diametrically opposed, or because they've thrown millions of dollars of support into campaigns of politicians that I do not agree with. So I would 100% not support somebody if their opinions were diametrically opposed. But at the same time, I guess, I mean, because you can get materials from, I guess there are a lot of options, especially when it comes to, well, is he just talking about makers or suppliers? Would you buy a maker's work?
I mean,
is that the question?
Let's just go with maker or supplier. I mean, it seems as though it's like small business guys. You know, I mean, you know, you don't hear like a lot of stuff from the big guys.
Yeah, I mean, you buy into, like we talked about again earlier, you buy into people, don't you? As much as the product, and if the person is a shitbag, you know, it's going to turn you off the product. That's my view.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I don't think they would be the top of my priority list to buy their work.
Good point.
That's for sure.
I think it's okay to be like, I think it's okay to diametrically opposed. Okay. Yeah. If somebody's doing something that you're diametrically opposed to, fine. Yeah. I don't want to support this person with my money. Fine. I think it's okay to disagree with people politically and still support them, you know. I'm not talking diametrically opposed. I'm saying, all right, one guy's a Democrat, one guy's a Republican. You don't see eye to eye on certain things, but at the same time, it's like we can still be friends. I think it's very important that at some point we need to have relationships with people who don't think exactly like. I don't need someone to be in a relationship with them. You know, a friendship relationship with them. But at the same time, it's like. Sometimes you got to cut someone loose, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had a funny story, and I just might as well just say it. So years ago, I used to love – we used to eat a shit ton of pasta, a fucking shit ton of pasta. And I loved Barilla pasta because it's good pasta, fucking good pasta. It cooks up nice, always good, blah, blah, blah. I happen to also have a ton of gay people in my family. I have a very – you know, my very diverse family, and I'm very supportive of them, and I love them very much. And all of a sudden, a number of years ago, Barilla Pasta comes out with this fakakta story like, oh, we are against gay marriage and we're against gay rights. And it was this whole fucking thing. And I'm like, so somebody says to me, I can't buy Barilla Pasta anymore. I'm like, what? What? What the fuck am I going to do now? So I'm walking down the pasta aisle and I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to do now? God damn it. You just can't keep your, God, it was hilarious. My wife was just like, what's the matter? I'm like, well, what are we going to fucking eat now? I love Barilla Pasta. Now I can't eat it anymore because they have a problem with gay people. God damn it. So it was this very funny thing. But I mean, I guess they turned their shit around, but it was funny
because you're back on the pasta.
I mean, I'm not on the pasta, but it was like, at the time, I was just like, you sons of bitches, why can't you, God damn you to hell. I was so funny. My wife was just like, what's the matter with you? I'm like, I can't get the goddamn Barilla Pasta anymore. No one's going to, everyone's mad about the Barilla Pasta. I can't buy the goddamn Barilla Pasta. So I'm back on with them. Fine. Okay. The next one comes from, Mark LeBlanc. Mark LeBlanc. Says, okay, the internet is completely dead. You have a bunch of knives that you have to sell door to door. Give your best sales pitch and remember you're live with your potential customer. I don't know what that means, but give your best sales pitch. The internet's dead. What's your sales pitch to sell your knives?
I'd be screwed.
Yeah. Come on, man.
No, nobody in my little village is buying my knives.
Dude, you just say what you wrote to me in that email, that drunken email. You're going to sell every single one of them.
I would go back to what I do once a year anyway, is jump on a plane, come over to my customers, which I'd go to, you know, restaurants. I'd spend a weekend visiting restaurants and showing them, you know, get a big knife roll, get all my work in there. And literally go selling, you know, face to face that way. One thing I have found is meeting with restaurants is surprisingly easy in the daytime. If you phone and manage to speak to the chef and say, you're a knife maker, can I come down and show you some knives? They get quite excited about it. So, yeah, I think that's a good move. So I'd certainly be doing that.
What do you think, Marco?
I'm not a salesman. So the question again was, there's no internet. What do you do to sell your work?
Yeah,
I'm not a salesman. So I would probably rely on a cutlery store or somebody else to do the selling for me. Or I don't know what I'd do, honestly. I mean, what were people doing before they were going to, or before there was like Instagram and Facebook and email lists and shit like that, and newsletters? They were going to trade shows, right? And they would stand there and have a conversation and talk with potential customers right there. So I guess that's probably what I would do. But at the same time, I don't stand there selling anything to anybody. I just talk to them about the work, and if they like it, they like it, and they ask a price, and they either buy it or they don't. That's it. Yeah. I'm not a salesman.
No hard sell.
Nope. Not
See,
for me.
I'm assuming if the internet's down, that now we're into like, you know, apocalyptic situation here. So I'm standing with like a trench coat. And my trunk is filled. I'm like, hey kid, you need to buy a knife. Come over here. I'll give you $500.
You look like a guy that likes to stab
Come on,
stuff.
Man. I'll one for $250, and for you, $500.
Starting to make zombie killers and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we get
zombie,
it, yeah.
Zombie. Let's more zombie. Okay, the next one comes from we have a couple anonymous ones. I like the anonymous ones. Here's a dilemma for you all. You are new to running your business and are invited to teach a class at another maker's shop. They have been nice to you, but have some differing opinions on the craft. On top of this, their reputation among other makers seems to be a mixed bag. Do you teach the class or keep your business separate for the sake of your reputation? So basically, it's like you get the opportunity to teach at a place that is... might have a blight on it, might have the scarlet A. Do you go and do it because of the maker's reputation?
Right.
Right. Or the school or the opinion or whatever. Do you go or do you politely bow out?
I suppose it depends why you're doing it. I mean, if you're doing it to, you know, for your own reputation, maybe not. But if you're doing it because they're giving you a big bag of cash.
Oh, yeah. Big bag of cash. You're there.
Take the big bag of cash. Yes, that's true.
Keep your eyes closed, your mouth shut, your head, your face covered.
Get the job done. Get home with the big bag of cash. Yeah.
I want to see somebody draw a picture of Craig with like the Monopoly man, the old school criminal, like with the domino mask and like the big bag with the dollar sign on it, like tiptoeing out a window or something like that.
The big bag of cash. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. What, I mean, what you guys, you've both done some teaching. I haven't. So, you know, what are your thoughts?
I mean, for me personally, my reputation is so closely tied to my work that I would have a hard time going somewhere to teach something if I didn't feel like it either confirmed or enhanced my reputation or person. Unfortunately, like, money isn't enough of a motivator for me. So, I probably wouldn't go do it myself personally.
Okay. Jeff, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, the places that I do teach at, it's a lot of it is my relationship with that person. Like, I really very strongly, I feel like the situations that I do with friends and are people that I like, you know, and it's people that I appreciate, people that I like. The teaching that I've done are for people that I already know. Like, I don't go to places that I don't know. I've had some opportunities to go to some places that I don't really know the people, and it's like, it didn't work out. But I mean, the places that I have done any teaching at, I've already established a relationship with, and teaching isn't my long game. It's not really like, I like it because I think that the more I do it, the better I become at understanding it myself. Like, I feel like, you know, when you teach something, you become better, more proficient at the thing that you're teaching. So I do it from a more of like a philosophical level. And in regards to places that I go, I mean, I haven't really gone to any places that I don't know the people. But I mean, at the same time, like, I do get opportunities. People say, hey, listen, we'll do something here and there. And it's just like, I would rather just have a relationship with someone that I know and that, or I respect that, than some, you know, yeah, the money's never that good anyway. I mean, it's like, teaching is, I hate to say it, but I mean, it is a schlep. It's not just like getting on a plane and then, you know, the red carpet's there for you. And it's just always like, it's a lot of work. So I would probably be in the same boat as Mareko, where I'd be like, you know, maybe some other time.
Fair enough. Okay. Do we have any more?
Yeah, we have a lot more. Ross Oliver Moffitt has to say, here's a dilemma for you guys. The night before a show, you price your knives according to what you think is fair and a reasonable price. The day of the show arrives and you realize your knives are priced relatively low in comparison to other knives at the show, even though they are, to an experienced eye, of noticeably better quality. What do you do? Thanks and keep up the good work. So, like, you got your prices. Hmm. You show up and you're like, whoa, my shit is low. What do? Get the fucking marquee. Get the marquee. You get the white out. Sharpie. The new tags, baby.
No. I think when you set your price in, you set a price in that you're happy with. You can't really, you know, let other people dictate what you're happy with. So, you know, you're probably in a very good situation there. If your quality is right up there with the best of them and your knives are far more inexpensive than others, you're probably going to walk away with an empty table. You're going to clean up. So that's probably a positive thing. But I wouldn't look at other people's work and go about repricing yours. That just seems a bit weird.
I didn't understand the second part of the question. So he was saying that his work looks better or the other people's work looks better?
No, what he's saying is he shows up with the prices. He looks at everybody else's prices. Everybody's prices are much higher. Yeah. And then he realizes that he's coming. It's not him. He's posing it to us that our work, you know, our work is clearly better. Or, you know, our work is clearly better than we think.
I mean, I don't do tags. And I think that maybe allows for a little bit of flexibility, especially if somebody walks up and wants to be an asshole, then that knife all of a sudden is $1,000 more expensive if they want to have it.
Slippery slope there.
Fluidity. Possibly. But again, it kind of goes back to that very first question about, you know, sure, so, you know, some of these people, their knives might not be as good as the ones that you brought, but who are you? You know, they might be really well known and have a really strong reputation, but if you're nobody, then it's kind of hard to justify pushing your prices up just because their prices are higher. If you're kind of in a similar ballpark regarding like notoriety and reputation and stuff, then sure, like maybe you do adjust your prices and, you know, I don't know. It's a shit show trying to figure out the exact price. And all you can do, honestly, I mean, ideally you want prices always to be going up, but there is flexibility to be able to raise your prices and lower your prices and keep making adjustments until you know, figure out what works for you.
Do you scan the customer, Mareko, when they say, you know, what does this cost? Do you look them up and down and check their shoes, see if they got decent shoes on or what?
No, never. I honestly have never done that.
What if their hands are slippery when they shake your hand? Is that automatically? Is there like in my mind, there's like a meter. There's like a little up and down meter. Like,
how clammy is this guy's paw?
it's like a Geiger counter of the price. I get that inner Geiger counter of what you could get this guy for. Oh, he's a jerk. I don't like what he said.
No. But
what's your thoughts, Jeff?
If I had a tray of like 50 knives or 25 knives I was going to bring to a show, and then we thoughtfully played out the pricing, and I show up and I'm just like, all right, I'm a little bit under what everybody else is doing, I've already decided that that's the price I want for these knives, and I'm not going to change it because it's just like, it's fine. Oh, you know, or hey, I'll move them all. Great. You know, or I'll know better next time. Or I don't really like, if I come up with a price, I usually just stick with it and just like, I mean, but I mean, I'm not, you know, I see it more like a, I also want to, I want to make sure that people for what I do and my decisions, that they're not like looking at my website and saying, well, why are you charging me that much when you, as on the website, it's charging me that much. You know, it's like, I don't want to, I'm not going to try to, you know, I'm not going to try to play a joke on anybody. Well, not a joke, but I'm going to keep it clear to, you know, what the range normally is. Cause at the same time, what you don't want is somebody saying, he's fucking selling him for $50 more than he sells him on his website. I'm just going to buy him on the website. You know, I'd rather, cause I have a, you know, trail of receipts. So I'd rather just stick with that.
Yeah, sure. That's fair enough.
Yep.
Well, let's come back to some more of these later, because you said you've got a big bunch of them. Let's do a few more questions.
Okay.
Let's have a look. Zhao Fu knives, I think. I can't stop getting Alfredo, is this you? I can't stop getting decarbs in my Damascus. He's dropping the pasta in his Damascus, I think. Is it a way to prevent that, or just keep hoping it doesn't happen? So decarb in his Damascus. How should he be preventing this? Miracle, what do you think?
I'm going to make an assumption that they are forging their knives. Actually, I guess you don't necessarily have to be forging your knife. So let's back it up. So you're doing stock removal from Damascus that you bought from somebody who knows what they're doing. So there's no question there. And you do some primary grinding before you do your final hardening. If you go too close to your final dimension, you could be left with a little bit of decarb in the surface of the final blade, even after you've done your finish grinding and hand sanding. And I've been there. I've experienced that, and that was a result of forging too close to dimension. So I always back it up a little bit nowadays. But anyways, I think try to account for yeah, whether you're forging or doing stock removal, is to account for maybe a 20,000th of an inch layer of decarb that you want to completely remove before you actually even get down to your good material that you're going to then finish grinding the knife and hand sand from. That keeps you from buffering in that little bit of material. And it's 20,000ths of an inch. It's like it's half the thickness of a porter band saw blade. It's almost nothing. And that way, yeah, you end up with a finished product that's looking sweet, honestly. But yeah, that's all you gotta do. Just you gotta budget in that extra material.
Cool. Anything more to that, Jeff?
No, he's right. I mean, that's why they say before you heat treat. That's why when somebody asks me how thick you heat treat to, a lot of the guys, the ABS, say that thinness is the thickness of a dime. So you can account for all that decarb. So, I mean, you don't go all the way to the end, you know, if you don't want to get that decarb.
No.
Cool. Do you want to take the next one from David Bonney?
David Bonney says, "Hello, Knife Talk. I'm quite new to the world of making knives, and I'm currently using a 1x30 belt grinder since I can't afford a lovely broadback with a Mareko platen. My question is, how do I make the most of the grinder I do have? Or more generally, make use of the limited forging / knife making tools that I have? Love the show. Thanks, guys. David Bonney." We get this.
So he's got one of those little 1x30s, and that was, you know, the first grinder that I bought as well, which I still actually use occasionally for knife handle shaping. But I always found they were just way too underpowered for any sort of steel grinding, really.
Sure.
You're just stopping it turning. I struggled a lot. But I have seen some videos of people online using them and making like amazing stuff. But yeah, I don't really have any tips. No tips from me, I'm afraid. Have you guys ever used one of those little 1x30 things?
I've ground on them, but I've never used one to make a knife. And like you were saying, they lack the power to keep moving the belt if you put too much pressure on. And so, yeah, if you're going to be grinding a blade from it, you honestly would probably be better off draw filing the knife before heat treat the knife, and then do just like the last bit of finish grinding on the knife, and that way you're not trying to do a heavy stock removal to get it down to finish grinding. That would actually kind of be my suggestion, really, is to draw file the knife before heat treat. When I was working at Dragon's Breath, the school come in and they were teaching the kids, and so they were teaching the kids how to make knives basically without any power tools, and we draw filed the knives and then hand sanded to like 220 and then heat treated, and then after the heat treatment, it was honestly basically there. So they did a little bit of refining in the hand sanding and then sharpened the damn thing and it was done. So maybe do more work before final hardening, so that afterward it's not as much of a pain in the ass, especially if it's mono steel. You know, you don't have to worry about any kind of weird decarb or anything showing up after etching.
Mm-hmm. Another thing about these as well, they obviously got a much smaller belt with less abrasive on there. So they, you know, if they don't stop, if they do keep turning, they just heat up really quickly as well, and that abrasive sort of burns out very, very quickly. But yeah, I mean, we can help you out with the broadback. We can get, you know, there's always good deals with us. What's the current deal, Morocco? What are Broadbeck doing at the moment?
Well, Broadbeck's already dropped their prices to make their machines more competitively priced. But when you go to checkout, if you put in Knife Talk at checkout, you get an automatic upgrade from their standard platen to the Morocco deep platen. But you know, these grinders are really awesome grinders. They're made by knife makers for knife makers to use. You know, you can flip it from vertical to horizontal. You can work at it using a chair. It's very comfortably. But they have, you know, I think their coup de grace is, you know, they have so many different tool arms that makes them so versatile and flexible as a company. So if you already have a chassis that you're happy with, they have tons of great tool arms that you can still use in your machine. So yeah, definitely go check them out at Broadbeck Ironworks, and make sure you use Knife Talk at checkout. And you can save and you can do some badass grinding.
And prepare yourselves, ladies and germs, because November 22nd through the 29th, they're going to have a Black Friday sale. They're going to have two special packages. The Super Mega Package includes the Mega Package, the Disc Sander, the Morocco Platen, and the Broadbeck Belt Kit. And the complete, it is a complete knife and sword maker shop. The upgrades are a $540 value, and then there's the Premium Plus, which is the slack belt attachment, the Morocco Platen upgrade, the Broadbeck belt kit, and it's an excellent basic setup for a knife maker. These upgrades are $375 value. So the 22nd to the 29th, go to broadbeckironworks.com, and they will have deals for Black Friday. And in regards to my opinion about what this guy was saying, I wanted to originally give him a little trouble and just say, this is what everybody fucking says to us. They say, oh, I only have this. How can I make the best things? Sometimes it's just like, I mean, I don't have an oven. What should I do? You're making knives. Sell fucking knives and buy your shit that you need. I get this shit. All the time people say this stuff to me and it's just like, but I don't have that fancy kiln. Well, fucking sell some fucking knives and make yourself a little jar that says, I want an even heat. And here's the jar. Go. I mean, you're making knives. The other thing, and I was gonna beat the hell out of this guy, and unfortunately, I'm not now. I apologize, because I'm telling you what I would do. I would take your 1x30 grinder. I would throw it as far into the woods as you can, and then I would get a right angle grinder, and then I would grind with the right angle grinder. You know, get yourself comfortable grinding with a right angle grinder, and you know, Knife Talk 10 gets you nothing. So fine.
Rightanglegrinders.com, Knife Talk 10.
Join the right angle grinder community and fuck some knives up. You know, that's what I would say. I mean, you get comfortable with a right angle grinder. I mean, you could knock out some bevels fast, quick in a hurry. I mean, your plunge lines might not look so great, but you know, you hustle. I think you move some material.
Yeah. But look, we can get discounts on grinders. We've already talked about discounts on ovens, and on belts, and even on steels with Dharma Steel. But anything else you need, you can get it all from TexasFarrierSupply.com. They've got everything for the knife maker there, or even farriers too. They've got everything. Go take a look, TexasFarrierSupply.com. If you use Knife Talk 10, you'll get 10% off your order. And also remember, they sell Indasa Rhino-Wet. Not many places sell it. It's the best stuff for hand sanding. So if you're heading over to Texas Flower Supply, make sure you put some Rhino-Wet in your basket and use Knife Talk 10 and get 10% off. So do you guys want to look down the list? Maybe we'll do one question each now, and then we'll call it a day. What do you think?
While you guys are looking for a question, I want to tell the audience that we are going to bring back the All Beef Review. This is the show we do once a year. It's my favorite show. Well, one of my favorite shows. And we read off your beefs or your hot takes. We'll take hot takes, too. We read off your beefs and your hot takes. And it's the whole episode of you bitching. And I think, and we read off all your bitchings, and it's always funny. So if you go to Knife Talk on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast Instagram, and then in the first letter, say this is for the All Beef Review, and then you can give us, don't give us the Magna Carta. Some of you guys are trying to be like Shakespeare a little bit. Bring it, pack it in nice and complete, and then we'll read off the All Beef Review, usually at the end of the year, like January or something like that. It's always fun. Go, and you should definitely go into the archives and listen to the All Beef Reviews, because we had some good shit in there. There's some good episodes. There's some great. I don't think that there's one bad All Beef Review.
Yeah, this is probably our fourth.
Probably, maybe
our fourth. Yeah. Okay, cool. Mareko, what have you got? Any questions there? Let's jump down.
Okay, this one is from Tradition Knives. What's your thoughts on permanently putting the steel type on the knife? What do you guys think?
I've done it once or twice.
Sure.
I think if it can be done sort of quite tastefully, I think if you're putting like a huge engraving or a huge mark on it, in a terrible font and all the rest of it, it can just look
Comic
really
Sans.
Cute. Yeah, it can, right. And I've seen people do that kind of stuff. It just looks terrible. But if you can do it tastefully, I think why not? I don't do it as a matter of course on all my knives, but I've done it on some. I've got no real problem with it. I mean, have you guys ever done it, or what are your thoughts on people who do?
What do you think, Jeff?
I mean, I don't do it myself. I don't really get sentimental about anything. So, like, I don't like that much on there. I like the least amount possible on there anyway. So I probably wouldn't do it. But, I know a lot of people do it. I think it's great for, I like the idea that it's about the longevity. When you're sending it down generations upon generations, they see that D2 and Comic Sans, and they know that. I think there's somebody should use some Comic Sans for their shit. I don't know why. I would buy
Comic Sans knives.
Yeah. Ben Kamen. That's what Ben Kamen's going to do next. Everything, those high level knives, everything's going to be in Comic Sans.
I mean, I personally don't see a reason to do it. I can see why maybe commercially manufacturers do it. But I think it really depends on your audience. And I think it comes down to like it being kind of a marketing point. Oh, it's made from D2 or whatever steel, S35 NV or whatever, any kind of like names. I guess that's VN, not NV. Anyways, I think if your audience, unless your audience is like really needs to see it on their blade to feel justified and good about buying that thing, then maybe that's it. But I think, I don't know, it kind of goes back to the original question. I think more than the actual steel quality, the people are buying the work because of you. And I don't really see the purpose of putting the steel type on there really at all.
There's some good steel names on there that would look good on a knife. Nitro sure. V.
Yeah.
Magna Cut.
Magna Cut. Yeah, oh man, that's awesome. That's like, whoa, this is Magna Cut? Give me some of that.
Sure.
I think as we see more and more people getting lasers, I think we'll probably see it more often because I see a lot of people that get a laser and they just can't help themselves, put laser everything. And I was the same when I first got mine. So, yeah, I'm sure we're going to see more of it. But, I've got no real issue with it.
It seems like an armchair expert kind of speaking point. you know, like, oh, that's D2 or that's Magna Cut. I don't really know what I'm saying, but this is what I read about it. Like, I think it's just, I don't know. It's a sales point for some people, but it honestly, like, there's a lot of really great materials out there. And unless somebody is a super metallurgist or steel of the week nerd, it doesn't matter.
Listen to me.
How's that for a hot take? Most of the steels you make your knives out of, it doesn't really matter as long as it has 0.6% carbon or above in it. How's that?
We need to do our own steel. And
the Knife Talk steel?
I have already figured out the name. And okay. If you are a steel maker and you are looking to sell all of your steel, we are offering to license the name Fucking A as the name of a steel. This is the name of the steel. It's called Fucking A. Fucking A is going to be the greatest steel that you're going to sell at all. I'm going to make, what's that? Oh, that's an 8-inch K-tip in Fucking A. Damn right. You're going to put it on your Comic Sans on the side of the knife? Oh, man. Give me some of that Fucking A. It's air quenched, obviously. And it's got high chromium, obviously. This is the baddest ass steel of all time. Fucking A.
Yeah.
Knife Talk 10 gets you 10% off your Fucking A.
There we go. And I think that's a show. I think we can call it a show there. Fucking A. Thank you all for listening, and we shall speak to you all very soon. Right. Welcome to the after show. For those in the know... I want to talk about I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I saw the Bond film this week.
Oh, was it good?
Oh, boy.
Oh, the best Bond film I've ever seen. Really? I love Bond films, too. It's incredible. It's very, very... It's got everything. It's got the, you know, the villain on his own private island. You know, it's got lots of references to the old Bonds. It's funny, as a good Bond should be. But there's a hell of a... The hell of a thing that happens that you don't expect in a Bond, which I won't talk about.
Wait a second. Now, this is going to our decision is going to determine your opinion. Give me your top five Bond films.
What's the one where Bond is, you know, the action sequence at the beginning, all the good Bonds have, where and also then Carly Simon comes out. Nobody does it better, you know, and he's falling down with a parachute.
That's Octopussy. Yes. It's not Octopussy.
I thought that was my sister. Okay.
Or The Spy Who Loved Me. Isn't that one it where is. Christopher it is. Walken? That.
Yeah, let me just pull it up. My sister said that. I thought that
Roger
was
Moore.
He does.
See, I'm going Thunderball. Thunderball and Goldfinger are pretty hard to beat. And then all the Daniel Craig ones are good.
Yes, yeah. Very. Honestly, this is, whether you're into Bonds or not, you know, even as a standalone movie, it's what you want from a Bond. It's got everything, you know, all the action, smoking hot women, as they always do. There's one woman in it where literally I think everybody in the audience took a gasp. She was like breathtaking, and she'd only in it for about maybe 15 minutes. And it's just like, wow.
Really?
But yeah, it's a real moment. But there's just so many references to like old Bonds. Even there's one point where he's like in a tunnel. And he walks out of the tunnel, and the camera view now is just down this tunnel, and then he jumps into frame and does the shot. You know, pulls out his pistol and does the shot like they do in the credits. It's just done superbly. It's done really well, and yeah, I'm excited for what's happening now with going forward, because things will have to be very different because the way it sort of ended. Mm-hmm. But it's very good.
Very good. Did you see Dune?
No, I haven't seen it. I know nothing of it, really. I've heard lots of people say it's great, but I don't really know anything of it.
Did you see it, Mareko?
I haven't seen it yet. I have plans, I think, next weekend to watch it.
It's great. It's great. I'm a huge fan. I like the original Dune, to be honest with you. And I know the book. I think I read the book in college. I think I was at a class. I had to read it, and I think I read it. I don't remember if I totally read it, but... Fucking good movie. Timothy Chalamet rules. He's
did you see The King? Did you watch The King on Netflix? It's a movie, a different movie he's in. and it's on Netflix. You can stream it. It's pretty good. But it's kind of like, what is it? Kind of the whole situation of, like the dad's the king and the oldest son doesn't want to be king. And then so on and so forth. There's a little bit of conflict there. And then, and Timothy is like this drunkard and womanizer. And then he's kind of like pushed into the position of becoming king and the whole conflict there. It was good. It was interesting.
Well, he's excellent. He's excellent as Paul Atreides.
Yeah, he's super talented.
He's very, very good. I enjoyed it. I was furious that it was, I was looking at the, I was like, this, I thought it was a one and done movie, like the original Dune. And all of a sudden I'm looking at that, I'm like, 13 minutes? I'm never going to wrap this fucker up in 13 minutes. I'm like, oh no, it's part one. So it was really, it leaves you really kind of, it's the whole thing, it's beautifully made, the music and the sand and the whole thing. Yeah. It's just, it's a beautiful movie to watch. Beautiful movie to watch. Really good.
Yeah,
really liked it.
I've heard nothing but great things.
Oh, dude, it's great. I mean, Jason Momoa is excellent, but I mean, he's no Shakespearean actor. He's just spitting out the lyrics like him.
I'm hyped about the. Have you seen the trailer for the Beatles documentary coming out or the Beatles show? No. I think they're calling it Get Back. I think they call it that, but. Basically, Disney had bought the rights to it. So when they were recording Let It Be, they had a film crew with them the whole time. And the whole thing was, you know, they were going to release this film, but on recording Let It Be. But obviously, that's when they split up, during the recording of it. None of this footage has seen the light of day until now. So they've edited it down to 6 hours. And they're going to make 3 2-hour shows. And Disney Plus are going to show it in November. But the trailer for it just looks... it looks beautiful as well because it's shot on old film, but they've got the colors and I'm very pumped.
So
it's gonna be very exciting.
You're a big Beatles fan.
Yes, massively. Yes, yeah. Who isn't?
Yeah. It's weird. I mean, Beatles are fine. It's like the Beatles
Stones
of the Stones.
You're a Stones fan, aren't you?
Yeah,
that's the problem.
In my family, it's the Beatles. One sister likes the Beatles. Me and my other sister like the Stones. It's always one or the other.
Well, you know. The Beatles now have a drummer and a bass player left, and the Stones have everybody but a drummer and a bass player. Imagine that as a band.
Yeah, well, Bill Wyman's still alive. I mean, they just threw him
out. Right.
Oh, right. Okay. I mean, don't kill Bill Wyman yet. Jesus Christ.
Take it all back.
Come on, man. He started like a...
He's still got 20-year-olds to marry, surely.
I think he started like a Rolling Stones Planet Hollywood restaurant or something like that. I think he's like cashing in. Bill Wyman didn't want any of that bullshit. He's at it with Mick and Keith and Ronnie Woods. They're rolling him out. Ronnie Woods looks like they got Ronnie Woods. He's doing these Instagram. I mean, they literally look like they're all like they're stored in like formaldehyde. I mean,
they do. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
it's like
they
it's
all
like
climb out of their jar.
It's like when you watch the Muppets and they have the really skinny Muppets where they're like, the arms are like, they have like little sticks holding them. They look like the really skinny Muppets. Yeah. Like, just like, whoa, man, maybe you shouldn't move so fast. I don't know if you can handle it. I mean, Keith, I mean, God bless him. There's a picture of Keith. There's a picture of Keith recently on a balcony with his shirt off drinking something and people thought it was the Queen.
Oh, jeez.
Fucking good.
Right, let's call it a day. We're an hour and a half in. I know, Jeff, you need to be somewhere. So, thank you. Always good to talk to you guys.
You too.
You too.
Yes, speak to you later. Bye for now.
Get up in the evening and I ain't got nothing to say. Come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired, man, I'm just tired and bored with myself. Hey there, baby, I could use just a little help. Can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire, even if we're just dancing in the dark. Messages keep getting clearer, radio's on and I'm moving around the place. I check myself in the mirror, I wanna change my clothes, my hair, my face. Man, I'm getting nowhere. I'm just living in a dump like this. Something happening somewhere. Hey, baby, I know that there is. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire, even if we're just dancing in the dark. Sit around getting older. There's a joke here somewhere and it's all on me. Shake the world off my shoulders. Come on, baby, laugh's on me. Stay on the streets of this town. They'll be carving you up all right. They say you gotta stay hungry. Hey, baby, I'm just about starving tonight. I'm dying for some action. I'm sick of sitting around trying to write this book. I need a love reaction. Hey, baby, give me just one look. You can't start a fire. Can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire, even if we're just dancing in the dark. Even if we're just dancing in the dark.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.